Welcome to Oscar Mike Radio. My name is Travis, Marine Corps veteran and your host. Oscar Mike Radio is co-produced with Sense to One Productions. What's your podcast doing? I want to thank my sponsors, Joyce Asak of Asak Real Estate, Danielle Rocco with Echo 6 Creations, and my supporters, Kason Shaving Company, Exceptional Parent Magazine, and Fight Camp. Be your strongest combination. This is our third episode of Celebrating Black History Month, and I want to extend a thank you to Deputy Secretary Andrea Gail Bennett for kind of getting this going last year, and you know, I want to keep it going, and she's going to be coming on for our fourth week to celebrate this month, and it's been a good one so far. And I'm reading my DAV.org magazine, and if you're disabled veteran and not a member of DAV, Disabled American Veterans, I strongly suggest you sign up and join. There's a lot of advocacy there, a lot of information, and I'm reading the magazine, which I like getting every month. And Elizabeth D. Pompey has an article about the Harlem Hellfighters. And I read the article, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I learned something that I did not know. And I've been very clear with people. Year eight was like, hey, you know, there's a lot about the military, the veterans experience that I will never know. And I'm fully willing to admit that. And so I think that's why it underscores why having focused series on certain parts of the veteran history, lore, or annals is important, because I would have never come across the Harlem Hellfighters unless I had gone through, you know, Harlem itself or ran into somebody. And so thank you, Elizabeth, for writing this article. Thank you to the DAV for the magazine and putting it together. I enjoy reading it. And so I'm going to go over, and I went focused on this, and I want to tell you the story. Because it's incredible and infuriating at the same time, kind of almost like Massachusetts 54th, but different in a way. So setting the stage, it's February 17th, 1919, New York City. A 100-piece jazz band is marching up Fifth Avenue, and you can barely hear them over the roar of the crowd. Two solid walls of Americans cheering themselves hoarse. Soldiers decorated with flowers like bridesmaids, one newspaper put it, or brides. These weren't just any soldiers coming home from the Great War. These were the men of the 369th Infantry Regiment, the Harlem Hellfighters. And their story? Well, thank you, Elizabeth, for telling this, because this is one that every veteran needs to hear. Now, World War I was a brutal war, and it's important, I felt, that any time we get a chance to talk about World War I, we should, for many reasons. And this unit was no exception to what they faced in World War I. And before we get to their combat record, which is absolutely legendary, let's talk a little bit about the battle these men fought before they ever saw a trench. Now, again, from last week's episode, we know that black men, black Americans, have always served in uniform since the Revolutionary War. And it wasn't until, as we learned last week, in the Massachusetts 54th Regiment, it wasn't until the Civil War that the U.S. Army actually formally put them in uniform and paid them. But they always served, they were always segregated, and they were always treated less than, though. And then in 1913, New York finally passed legislation allowing a black unit of the National Guard. Now, again, for those who don't know, you have the U.S. Army, and then you have the reserves, and then you have the National Guard. And the National Guard is, in a very loose way of saying this to make it understandable, think of a militia, a formal militia, as the National Guard. And it's a great oversimplification, I know, but it's just to help you distinguish that, the fact that the National Guard serves at the state level. The reserves are the reserve units from the active military, and then you have the active military. And this unit was part of the New York National Guard. And so, in some ways, you think this was progress, but it wasn't. It took 3 more years before the 15th New York National Guard actually formed. The reason for that was because the white National Guard units didn't want them there. And in her article, she got a quote from Jeffrey Sammons, a military historian at New York University, says the delay was entirely due to, quote, resistance of the white New York National Guard, period, close quote. Think about that for a second. These men wanted to serve their country, and their own countrymen were the first enemy they had to overcome. But as I'm reading this, as I'm going into the story, as I'm looking at Elizabeth's article and other sources, here's what really got to me. When 1916 came around, and we had that dust up on the Mexican border, suddenly New York's National Guard units were depleted. World War I is raging in Europe. And wouldn't you know it, wouldn't you just know it, they needed soldiers. They needed people to answer the call. Retired Army Colonel Kervesky Salter puts it perfectly. We need men in the war effort, and it doesn't matter what color they are. Convenient, right? But here's the thing, and this is what every veteran listening will understand. Thousands of black men answered that call anyway. Not because America had earned their loyalty, but because they were, as Salter says, red-blooded Americans who wanted to serve their country. Their motivations, same as any soldier. Love of country, sense of duty, and maybe, just maybe, the hope that their service would mean something when they got home. At the time, President Wilson said, "We are making the world safe for democracy." These men believed that that might finally include them. Let's go forward to December 1917. The 369th arrives in France. They're trained infantry, all volunteers. And you know what the army gives them? Pickaxes and shovels. Not weapons, not armor, not mechanized infantry, pickaxes and shovels. Instead of rifles, they got designated as a labor unit. Colonel Salter calls it what it was, a slap in the face. But here's where the story takes a turn. The French had been bleeding since 1914. They desperately needed reinforcements. General Pershing, commander of the American Expeditionary Forces, had orders to keep American units under American command. But he had a problem. He needed to help the French without giving up white soldiers. Doesn't take a genius to figure out who he loaned out. He loaned out the 369th. I want you to listen to and if you want to look it up, I'll have the link. Read something that will make your blood boil. When Gina McVeigh, granddaughter of the 369th soldier Lawrence McVeigh, was researching her grandfather's unit, she found a letter from AEF headquarters to the French. This letter advised French forces to not eat with black soldiers, not to shake their hands, and get this, not to commend too highly the black American troops. Why? Because contact with the French might, quote, inspire in black Americans aspirations to which from them appear intolerable, period, close quote. I'm going to say that again. Contact with the French might, quote, inspire in black Americans aspirations to which to them appear intolerable, close quote. Gina McVeigh said it broke her heart. And even now it should break all of ours. But the story changes again. Here's what happened next. And this is why every veteran needs to know this story. Every American needs to know this story. Under French command, the 369th became legends. 101 days under fire, longer than any other American regiment. Never lost a prisoner. Never gave up a foot of ground. And fought in the Meuse-Argonne offensive. And captured the village of Chaalt. Private Henry Johnson became the first American ever awarded Francis Croix de Guerre. This man fought off a German raiding party in hand-to-hand combat. We're talking knives, rifle butts, and pure determination. Lawrence McVeigh also wore the Croix de Guerre after leading an attack that left him with a gunshot wound in the arm. In total, 170 members of the 369th received France's highest honor. I want to say it again for those in the back. 170 American soldiers received France's highest honor while their own country, us, was telling the French not to shake their hands. Let's go back to February 17th, 1919. A little over 100 years ago. You know that parade I mentioned at the beginning? It was glorious. For one day, New York and America celebrated these heroes. But here's the thing about the parade. They all end. Within months, America erupted into what historians call the Red Summer of 1919. Racial violence rose across dozens of cities. An estimated 250 black Americans were killed in 10 months. In Arkansas, 369th veteran Leroy Johnson, wounded in France, decorated for his service, was murdered along with his three brothers in the Elaine Massacre. This is what making the world safe for democracy looked like for black veterans. And unfortunately, it gets worse. In 1925, the Army War College released an official report on black soldiers. This official Army document called black Americans as inherently weak in character and claimed they had failed in World War I. Failed? The Harlem Hellfighters? The most decorated American unit of World War I? Professor Sammons, a professor emeritus at New York University, calls this document devastating. Because it institutionalized a denigration of black soldiers. This document remained in official Army doctrine through World War II. It wasn't until 1948, 29 years after the Hellfighters came home, that President Truman finally desegregated the military. Here's one thing that really gets me as a veteran at times, and it's the context perspective around recognition. And so I want to recognize just a handful of these brave soldiers from the 369th. Lawrence McVeigh, Purple Heart in 1933, 13 years after being shot. Henry Johnson, Purple Heart in 1996, 77 years late. Henry Johnson, Medal of Honor in 2015, 96 years late. The entire 369th Regiment, Congressional Gold Medal in 2021. And in 2021, every single one of them was deceased. Gene McVeigh is quoted as saying something that really hits hard to me as a veteran. They need to be honored because they fought for a country that did not fight for them. In closing, as veterans, we all know what it means to serve. We all know about sacrifice, about putting on the uniform, even when our country and your country lets you down. But the Harlem Hellfighters, they did it while fighting a two-front war, one against the Germans and one against their own country. The combat record speaks for itself. Most days in frontline trenches, most casualties of any American regiment, never lost ground, never lost a prisoner, 170 Croix de Guerre recipients. These men prove what we all know. Courage doesn't care about color. Honor doesn't check your skin tone. A warrior is a warrior. More than a century after that parade up Fifth Avenue, we are finally starting to learn what was drowned out by those cheering crowds. The call to honor all of those who fought for freedom, not just some, all. The Harlem Hellfighters didn't just earn their place in military history. They earned their place in the pantheon of America's greatest warriors, and it's about time we recognized it. One of my first eye-opening experience to World War I, there's two of them. It was visiting the World War I monument in Washington, D.C., and it's a small monument. It's tucked out of the way. In fact, at the time, you could tell that it did not get the attention that the other monuments got. And it was kind of embarrassing because, again, World War I was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. And here we are, still fighting. And then I read the book, and I'll have the link to this book in the Oscar Mike Radio show post, Eye Deep in Hell, which really chronicles the soldiers' experience in trench warfare during World War I. And it's just inconceivable, unbelievable, that that was the accepted doctrine for war at one time in our history. And so, you know, I do these shows during this time to bring attention to the contributions and the service of our fellow Black Americans. I don't want them forgotten. I want to thank Elizabeth D. Pompey from Disabled American Veterans Communications for writing this article. A lot of the substance and context from this show came from that article. It certainly brought attention to me. And, you know, and if you see this magazine, the front cover, it draws you right in. Those are proud men there. These are proud Americans. And thank you to the DAV. Thank you to Elizabeth for making sure that they're not forgotten. And they won't be forgotten here. I'm Travis with Oscar Mike Radio. We're Mission in Flight. Thank you for allowing me to tell you this story. I'll see you next time.
Every generation, every sacrifice. Our nation's service members have stood up for our freedom, our families, and our future. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. This year, you can honor their service in a deeply personal way by sponsoring a $17 Veterans Wreath. Each wreath is more than a symbol. It's a heartfelt tribute to the heroes who served and to the families who carry their legacy. Visit wreathsacrossamerica.org to sponsor a wreath today. This isn't just a wreath. It's a personal gift to an American hero.
Thank you for listening and watching Oscar Mike Radio, where our active duty service members and veterans are in action and the mission is in flight. Oscar Mike Radio is an Oversized Load Coast Sinister One production. If you are a veteran or know a veteran who needs help, please dial 988 and press 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line.